and a good Monday. I'm Jason Page. Don't mind me. Just here for the good golf. Oh, how good was that U.S. Open final on Sunday? That final round from the Country Club in Brookline, Massachusetts, which we had to hear so much about. Oh, my God. So much for trying to draw in a younger audience to watch golf. Because if you were somebody younger and you had to sit there and hear about Francis Ouimet, and it's a great story, but I didn't need to hear it every other hour or every other minute or every other second or the segments or the house or the clubs he used and on and on and on. I get it. It's about the storytelling and the history matters, and I'll get to that in a second. But just give me golf. There's enough great golf shots going on in this tournament. There was enough great golf shots going on in this tournament that I did not need end-to-end coverage of Francis Ouimet's house. Congratulations to Matthew Fitzpatrick, by the way. I mean, that guy gutted it out on a tough day for golf. And look, you know, the guys who were in position to make a charge and win this thing simply could not make that charge. You know, Scottie Scheffler was 3-under, but he struggled on the back nine a bit. Rory McIlroy was 1-under on his round, couldn't make that big run. John Rahm, which was who I was thinking was going to make that run, couldn't do it. Keegan Bradley, the hometown guy, couldn't do it. The round of the day really was turned in by Hideki Matsuyama, who got it to 3-under with a 5-under round, but that was it. It was as good as it was going to get. And Matthew Fitzpatrick did just enough. I mean, look, his ball striking was out of this world. I mean, him and Will Zalatoris going toe-to-toe on that back nine was as good a golf as you're going to see. There aren't a lot, and I'll say this. I'm one of those guys that if Tiger isn't in it, I tend to watch less, and I tend to be less focused on tuning in. I was riveted. Every single shot I watched on Sunday. Did I have the Yankees on a second screen? Yes. But every single shot I was watching. That's as good as golf gets. And it comes back to this, and I don't mean to give this too much oxygen because I've got kind of a secondary viewpoint on this whole live golf thing as I've thought about it. As I think about this live golf thing, watching yesterday only further validates the idea that live golf is a joke. And look, I know they're pouring in tons of money. Hey, there's light. There you go. I know they're pouring in tons of money and going and grabbing some golfers. And Jason Sobel, who I had a chance to talk to before we came on the air, Jason Sobel and I talked about this, and he actually said something in our conversation that I think is very newsworthy. Not that he doesn't always say something that's newsworthy. Formerly of ESPN, the Golf Channel, now he's with the Action Network. Jason Sobel makes some really interesting news that may run contrary to what I'm about to say. But to me, the best way to kill live golf, figuratively speaking, is to not give it any oxygen. Is to simply not talk about it because it's a joke. It's not real golf. It's 54 holes. It's 3 rounds. It's no cut. It's guaranteed money. Watch that event yesterday and tell me how much different it would have played out if Scottie Scheffler knew he had huge money in the bank. If Matthew Fitzpatrick knew he had huge money in the bank. Before the tournament ever starts, they're already making bank. Tell me how much differently that tournament plays out on Sunday if these guys already know they're making bank. Dahman, the guy who, I don't even know his first name because he's a relative nobody on the tour, made $400,000+ yesterday. The shot making becomes completely different when you're talking about life-changing money for some of these guys who have never been a factor on the tour. Now you say, you know what, we'll go play the LIV Golf Tour. We got guaranteed paychecks. Even if we finish in last, we're getting $120,000. Yay! That's not real golf. What you saw yesterday validated professional golf in the United States, the PGA Tour. In every way. And the best way, and I think the only way LIV Golf survives long term is if the media covers it. They don't have a TV deal. I think people are quickly realizing and getting keen to the fact that it's not real golf, it's not real competition, and it's just a money grab by these mercenaries from the PGA Tour and beyond. But all the credit in the world to Matthew Fitzpatrick, who was as good as you can be on a day where the conditions were tough. And look, this was a 7,200-yard course. It's not a long course. So a lot of people probably wondered if it could stand up to some of the best golfers in the world, these long hitters, yada, yada, yada. It stood up just fine. No problem for the country club at Brookline. They had no problem at all. The groundskeepers did a great job, and I mean that rough was brutal. There were parts of it that looked like a British Open course. And does this open up the floodgates now for Matthew Fitzpatrick to sort of take that next step? Be a guy that we see in this position time and time and time again. And for Will Zalatoris, 8 top 10s this year. I think that might be the most, other than maybe Scottie Scheffler. 8 top 10s this year for Will Zalatoris, including the one yesterday. It's only a matter of time before that guy wins a major. You have to think that. So we'll get into all of that with my man, Jason Sobel. Stay with us. We'll do some NBA talk as well. Don't mind me on this Monday, June the 20th, 2022. Jason, as U.S. Opens go, that was about as good as it gets. I mean, you got the ultimate challenge. Only 7 or 8 guys under par. There was 9 guys under par. Thrilling finish. 2 guys looking for their first major. How do you grade and sort of sum up what we saw over the last 4 days?
I mean, if that's not an A, I'm not sure what is. I guess, what was it, 14 years ago, almost to the day, we had Tiger Woods beating Rocco Mediate in a playoff at Torrey Pines. If that's the barometer, if that's a perfect 10 on the scale, this was a 9.5. I love the fact that, first of all, we had a bunch of the world's great players on the leaderboard throughout the weekend. We had a ton of really good golf up there. There wasn't a fluky type player really in there. It was a great board throughout. We had a course that really showed out. I was a little worried, quite honestly. The country club's been around for a long time. It's only 7,254 yards. I was like, are they really going to get this playing like a U.S. Open? And if they do, are they going to have to trick it up so much that it's not really going to be a fair test of golf? And I thought the course was absolutely fantastic throughout the entire week. And then my MVP for the entire year in golf so far has been Mother Nature. We've got 3 major championships, plus the Players, where essentially the 4 rounds were played over 4 different seasons. We had cool weather, we had warm weather, we had dryness, we had rain, we had windy, we had calm. And that's at all 4 of these events so far. So Mother Nature is showing up, whether it's Mother Nature or the golf gods or whoever it might be looking down upon us. We've gotten some interesting weather at all 4. And look, we want to see the best players in the game tested in all aspects of their game at these events. That's what it takes, is different types of conditions. Matt Fitzpatrick withstood the conditions.
And it does go to show you, though, that you know, we've remember the days of tiger proofing courses and making them super long. And, you know, now the DeChambeaus of the world and all these guys that hit the ball super long. So they had to lengthen these courses. It does go to show you that you can take a course that is not that long and you still only wind up with nine guys under par.
The fifth hole, a drivable par four, gave them fits the entire week. I mean, these guys couldn't put it where they wanted to, and more guys were making bogeys than birdies. The 11th hole played 111 yards on Sunday, and these guys were struggling with it. The 17th hole, where Francis Ouimet lived when he won the 1913 U.S. Open at the Country Club, that was a tough hole, played, you know, very short this week. So you're absolutely right. You do not have to stretch out golf courses to 7,800, 7,900 yards to test the world's best golfers these days.
First, the golf stories, then from the handicapping side, because you are with the Action Network, and I appreciate that you do that. Does this first win for Matthew Fitzpatrick unlock him for even bigger things, especially when you consider the British is just a couple weeks away?
Look, the last thing I want to do is rain on a guy's parade right after winning a major championship.
But you're about to.
The second to last thing I want to do is pump up a guy so much, because my biggest pet peeve in this industry is after a guy wins and on Monday morning, everyone sits around and goes, man, if he plays like that every week, he's going to win every time. Well, yeah, that's the whole point. They don't play like that every week and they don't win all the time. Matt Fitzpatrick is a tremendous player. He's been second. He's been first for most of the PGA Tour season in strokes gained total, second right now, just behind Rory McIlroy, who passed him last week. But that essentially is the best barometer for who is performing the best throughout the year. So Matt Fitzpatrick is no flash in the pan or anything like that. That said, I'm not so sure I'm ready to watch the floodgates open for Matt Fitzpatrick right now. It's a great win. I think the U.S. Open is going to be perennially the major championship where he has the best chance of winning one. But let's pump the brakes a little bit before we start calling him, you know, the next Tiger Woods or anything like that. It's not going to go that far.
All right, I'll put you on the spot. Is he a guy that wins another?
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
or is he like so many we've seen? Who won the U.S. Open years ago? Gosh, I'm trying to think of his name. Plays the Travelers, where you and I are familiar. Oh, he's an American. I can't think of his name. Won a U.S. Open, then never won anything again.
Lucas Glover.
Lucas Glover. That's exactly who. Did he win at Bethpage? Yeah.
He did win at Bethpage. Beth won Page. A couple of other PGA yeah. Tour events. I think Matt Fitzpatrick has a better pedigree than a Lucas Glover. I think he's going to be around and have more staying power than a Lucas Glover. Not that Glover hasn't stuck around. He's been a good player for a long time, but I think he's more got a little more star potential. That said, he plays his best golf on really hard golf courses. He gets a little bored when it's 24 under par winning a golf tournament. There just aren't that many tournaments throughout the entire year where six under or worse than that is going to win the tournament. So there's not a lot that kind of fit his profile. That said, he's a good player. He's going to be around for a while. Can he win another one? Look, just because most people would say yes right now, I'm not trying to be a hater. I'll say no, just because I look at the guys behind him, the Will Zalatoris and Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy and Colin Morikawa, the next four on the leaderboard, plus a whole bunch of other guys out there who are really good. They're waiting in the wings to win these things too. There's only four every year. You can't pick everyone to win four more majors for the rest of their career. The math doesn't check out. So I'll say no, but I hope that doesn't come across as me, you know, hating on Matt Fitzpatrick after this victory.
Talking with Jason Sobel, the Don't Mind Me podcast here on this Monday. Watching Will Zalatoris, who I think a lot of people were rooting for, including me. You know, this guy, what, he was on tour only because of a medical exemption, what, less than 2 years ago he was able to play, something to that effect. You know, no doubt this guy won't only get into the winner's circle, but he's going to win a major. I mean, you got to think he's going to win. I mean, eight top tens this year, you know, cashing big checks. This is a guy you got to imagine gets into a major, wins a major at some point, right?
Okay, so there are no inevitabilities when it comes to winning major championships. We thought Colin Montgomery would win a major. We thought Lee West, but Ricky Fowler for a long time would win a major. Now we think Xander Schauffele, he's eventually, yeah, sure, he's going to win one. Patrick Cantlay, yeah, of course he's going to win one. It doesn't happen for some players. Just sometimes things happen. Now, like I said, there are a lot of other good players. If I had to put my money on it, I'd say Will Zalatoris wins multiple major championships. I tend to think he's a generational ball striking talent. I think he's fantastic. I believe that if and when, and I think it's when, he does win his first major championship, he will look back on all these close calls and say, I couldn't have done it without those experiences. That said, again, nothing's inevitable, and there's a non-zero chance that 10 years from now, a 35-year-old Will Zalatoris looks back on his career and says, man, I wish I had done just a little bit better when I had all those chances early in my career, because it got harder as I kept playing.
Yeah, and I tell you, though, he was something else. And you mentioned Scottie Scheffler. This was the first time we've seen him in a big spot. You know, he didn't make the cut at the Players. But, I mean, this is PGA Championship. Yeah. He didn't make the cut there. But this is the first time we've seen him in a big spot. And it happened to him on Saturday on the back nine, and it hit him again on Sunday on the back nine, where he sort of came up short and proved, he might be the number one player in the world, but he's human.
Scottie Scheffler is a tremendous talent. We're going to be seeing him for a long time to come. Maybe don't talk about Scottie Scheffler as much as some other players. He's not flashy, whatever flashy means. He doesn't necessarily do anything better than everybody else. He's not the best driver of golf ball. He's not the best iron player. He's not the best putter. He just does all of those things really well. And he also might be the least controversial player off the course that we see. He's just a nice guy who kind of says all the right things. There's not much to say about Scottie Scheffler other than, man, he's really good. And so we just don't talk about him as much, just because the conversation is, man, he's really good. You can't keep saying that, having that conversation over and over. But, man, he's really good.
He's as charismatic as off-white paint, man. I mean, if you're the tour and you're these guys on TV, and you know, look, we've worked in TV, we've worked in radio, you know how it is. You're looking for stories, and Scottie Scheffler, yeah, he's great, wins, but man, oh man, it's got to bore some people to tears.
Trust me, the PGA Tour will take any number one player they can get right now, charismatic or not.
Fair enough. Biggest surprise from Sunday for you? Good, bad, indifferent, whatever it may be. Was there a big surprise to you that, you know, in terms of the way it played out, somebody that you thought was going to make a run that didn't, you know, Rory coming up short, John Rahm, who kind of struggled to put it all together for 18 holes each day. Was there one thing that kind of surprised you?
I'd probably go with Rahm. I watched Rahm early in the round. I thought, okay, he's kind of got that dialed look right now. Chased up the leaderboard, and it just never really happened. Hasn't quite had his best stuff this year. He's got one win. The Mexico Open, essentially, it was him and a bunch of journeymen and young players that he was playing against. So it was hardly against the best players in the world. He's playing right now. He's always a force at major championships. There's just something missing, just a little bit, for John Rahm's game right now. I was a little surprised based on what I saw from him early. It looked like he had that game on to go seriously contend, but other than that, not much surprised me. The course may have surprised me a little bit from what I thought it would be, and then I left my cell and went to the course on Sunday morning. It rained overnight, it got a lot softer. I would like to see that course stay fast and firm with the greens baked out and a little crusty. That would have been fun on a Sunday after a little more plays on Saturday. Still, I thought the course took.
Talk about, and I don't want to waste too much time on this. I had Damon Hack on last week, and we talked a lot about the LIV Golf stuff and Phil Mickelson and all that jazz. Give me some thoughts, though, on Mickelson, his 2 days, nearly dead last. All he brought was LIV Golf evangelism and bad golfing, basically, was what I said. What was the atmosphere like around him and the rest of the LIV Golf mercenaries?
Yeah, so you might have lost me there, but Phil admittedly did not play good golf this week, and I don't think he was focused. I don't think he was ready to go play major championship golf. He said afterwards, I thought I was more ready than I actually was, but I just wasn't ready to go into a U.S. Open pressure cooker and play my best golf. Where does Phil go from here is a great question, because, I mean, obviously the factual answer is he goes and plays LIV Golf, and, you know, he plays in 54-hole meaningless events in weird spots and gets paid a whole lot of money for it. But where does he go as far as his legacy, as far as how we see him? I don't know. It's a fantastic question. I think Phil's going to lose a lot of things other than just, you know, sponsorships and fans. I don't think as of right now that he'll ever captain a Ryder Cup, which we presumed wouldn't just happen. But I thought he would be a Ryder Cup captain almost in perpetuity, you know, sort of like a U.S. Olympic basketball coach where he takes it over and he does such a good job with it that they just keep him in the role for 20 years. I really thought that Phil would have that much of an impact. And now all of a sudden there's this glaring hole where Phil used to be. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if the next move for Phil is at some point taking over Greg Norman's role. At some point, Norman's going to want to work for the rest of his life and be an executive. He's kind of done his duties here, which is, hey, I want to give guys lots of money and I want to disrupt the PGA Tour and change the balance of power in professional golf. He's sort of done that. I wouldn't be surprised if Phil takes over Live Golf. Phil sort of is the bad guy and takes over there. But as far as Phil's playing career right now, I just don't know if we see Phil play world-class golf ever again, quite honestly.
I brought this up at the start of the show today, and I'll bring it up now. I think the greatest thing, the greatest threat to Live Golf isn't the PGA Tour. It isn't, you know, guys not going over and playing. You know what it is? It's the media not covering it. Because the only thing that gives this life, they don't have a TV deal. Yeah, they've got a couple of good golfers. But if the media doesn't cover it because it's not a legitimate tour, which it isn't, guys aren't playing for paychecks. They're not playing even to make a cut. They're getting paid no matter what. If the media doesn't cover this, like the joke that it is, doesn't cover it, it won't have the oxygen to survive, Jason.
I somewhat agree with that. This is the ice capades. Essentially, they're paying players just to perform, and it doesn't really ensure they pay more money if they perform better than their peers. That said, I don't think they need media. I don't think they need anything. This is a different business model than we've ever seen. I've seen people try to compare it to the USFL or the XFL. Those fledgling leagues that wanted to turn a profit. They wanted to be big time and turn a profit, and that was the goal. The goal of this is, hey, at some point, we're going to change the minds of what people think of Saudi Arabia and our government. And so they don't really care right now if we're watching, if we're covering it, if we're paying attention. They're just going to give lots of money to some big name players and see what shakes out. They want disruption and they want to play the game. And the game is everybody's got a price. Let's figure out what the price is for all these big name players. And Jason, I'm telling you, this week, the storm's brewing. If you're a big time golf fan, if you're interested in what's going on, do not go too far from your phone. There's a lot of stuff that's going to happen. I have heard a lot of big names tied to Live, whether that just means they've been made an offer, whether it means there's negotiations, or whether it means, hey, they're actually going. But there are a lot of big names talking to them right now. Things are going to happen very, very quickly.
There's going to be more guys, even seeing the reaction to what's happened to Phil and these guys. You're telling me more guys are going to do this?
Way more. This is the tip of the iceberg so far.
Wow, that I'm shocked. I'm very rarely am I at a loss for words. I'm at a loss for words. I did not think that would be the case. Wow.
Oh yeah. Some big names.
Big names. See, I can understand if it's the guy who's, you know, 200th on the money list. That I get. I don't get the big name aspect. I just don't get it.
And it's going to be as far as I know, and you know, maybe this stuff doesn't shake out. Maybe players back out or it doesn't work out with the negotiations. We never know. But what we've seen so far is that players who are in that range of 38, 48 years old on the back nine of their careers, ready to sort of slow down and not play as much golf, not as interested in their legacy and winning major championships, but
playing the Champions Tour.
Yeah. Let's set up our family for the next 100 years based on the money we can make doing this. You're not going to see necessarily all those, but you're going to see some players who are half that age and some players who are at the peak of their games who go over there and decide to play golf over at Live. I really think that's going to happen. It might happen soon.
Wow. Jason Sobel joining us, does a great job. Action Network on the golf side of things. Before I get to sort of handicapping the British, I don't know if you saw the picture that was on Instagram tonight. Somebody just sent it to me before we got you on. With Tiger Woods and his leg, and seeing what it actually looked like. He was wearing shorts in this picture. Yep. And, you know, people were saying it's all the more amazing. When you see that image, I couldn't get through this interview without getting a Tiger Woods question in. When you see that image, just how striking it is. You and I remember him in 2008 beating Rocco Mediate and sitting there, everybody looking at the TV at the U.S. Open on Monday. Is it all the more amazing what he accomplished just playing Augusta for four rounds, 14 months after that?
Yeah, it was amazing already. I mean, I don't know that seeing the image makes me think it's any more amazing. It's kind of what I expect. I mean, Tiger's described it. Tiger's not hidden anything from us other than not showing us his leg, not lifting up his pant leg and saying, hey, take a look, guys. But Tiger really hasn't hidden anything from us about, you know, what kind of damage he's had, what he's been through, and what the leg looks like. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily surprise me, but yes, what he's done, making the cut at the first two major championships this year. He had to withdraw, of course, from the PGA after the third round. He was really hurting then, didn't play the US Open. I expect him to not only play the Open Championship, but play pretty well. But I think we can safely say we're past the Tiger era right now. If he plays great, I love the fact that he's at least trying and giving the effort. If he plays well, even better. But obviously, it's going to be very difficult for him. I've always said the biggest hurdle for Tiger isn't just his health, isn't just finding his swing. It's, hey, he's got to go out and beat Scottie Scheffler and Jon Rahm and Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas. I mean, there are so many really good players out there right now. So it's not just, hey, go play four rounds and walk around the golf course and try to stay healthy. It's, you've got to beat some big time players if you want to get back to the level you were once at. And I just don't think that's going to happen. But again, if he wants to try it, he wants to go out and play, and he gives us something else to watch on a major championship weekend, I'm all for it. I love it.
Yeah, I'm with you. How do we handicap the British coming out of this? What do the odds look like?
Yeah, so I haven't looked at the odds in a little bit. I think Rory McIlroy is probably the favorite right now, and
he was the favorite going into this week too, wasn't he? At the end,
he was. Yeah, the betting markets usually they usually lower Rory just a little bit based on some bias from the public. You know, it's like betting the Yankees or betting the Dallas Cowboys or the Los Angeles Lakers. Everyone likes the popular teams. Everyone likes Rory McIlroy, so they want to bet on him as well. They want a ticket on him. I love him for St. Andrews. I will wait to make my pick until we know what the weather is going to be like there. And like I said earlier, Mother Nature has played a big part in the three majors so far. It would surprise me if we don't at some point get some 40-mile-an-hour winds and some sideways rain during that week. But if we get perfect conditions, these guys are going to tear apart St. Andrews. They're going to shoot 63s and 64s throughout the week. Nobody is better at racking up birdies than Rory McIlroy. I think it's a great spot for him if the weather doesn't come blowing through.
Travelers Championship this week, back in our old stomping grounds in Connecticut. Are there any early odds out there, and what's it sort of look like? I know Rory's there, isn't he?
He is. There's no odds as we're speaking right now. I'm going to write my preview, actually, after we finish this. I'm going to start working and looking at the field. Haven't done anything yet. So, I mean, I'm coming off a major. Haven't even looked at it yet.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm interested to see what some of these events look like now with some of these guys bailing for LIV Golf. And does it sort of open up the door? I mean, if guys are suspended from the tour and can't play these PGA Tour events, does that just mean more invites, you know, that get sent out to guys that wouldn't typically play? I mean, who's going to get these spots?
Essentially, they go down the priority list. Now, the RBC Canadian Open 2 weeks ago, which was the first week where players were suspended, that went pretty far down the priority list. And you had guys who are 60 years old who once won a PGA Tour event who are getting onto the list.
Wow.
And that probably needs to change. It probably needs to go to some more young players rather than older, washed-up players. You won't see that at the Travelers. The Travelers, I think the field is going to be strong enough that it doesn't go that deep. I would think that, yeah, if this thing continues, you're going to see more opportunities for young players. And I've said this for a while now. It looks like it's going to change. I mentioned a few minutes ago that LIV is going after some big-name players. But if they don't get them, and that's a very real possibility, if LIV continues to be sort of this haven for the guys on the back nine of their careers, this could wind up being a symbiotic relationship. The tour will never admit it. LIV will never admit it. But the players get paid. LIV gets a bunch of big names. The tour gets to push out guys at the end of their careers and maybe replace them with some younger players. It's a win-win-win for everybody. I don't know that it's going to shake out that way, and I know they wouldn't admit it, but in an ideal, perfect world, that could happen.
They're going to get a TV deal?
I don't think they want it. I don't think they care.
Really?
Here's at some point. They really, really don't care.
That's fascinating. I'm just so fascinated by it from the legal aspect, because they say they're going to put up this fight against the tour. And again, I don't know how they win in that battle, because they're all independent contractors. I know as somebody who's been an independent contractor before, my last 2 years at SiriusXM, I was an independent contractor. I worked every day like a full timer, but I was an independent contractor. And they can get rid of me whenever they want. I don't know how they win that fight. I don't know if you talk to anybody on the legal side.
You could go do a show on another network if you wanted to as well, because you're independent. And so to shut down these players who are independent contractors, I've spoken with some attorneys about this, and essentially what they've said, if this does indeed go to court at some point, think about all the people who are independent contractors, Uber drivers.
Yeah.
If you're an Uber driver and you don't work for Uber, you just work with Uber, and then Uber says, you can't go drive for Lyft. You can't go drive for DoorDash because you work for us. All of a sudden it goes to the court. The court's going to rule in favor of the independent contractor and not the companies themselves. It's going to open up an entire can of worms as far as antitrust laws and things like that. Way above my pay grade, but things are going to change if this does indeed go to courts at some point.
Yeah, it's way above my pay grade too. Jason Sobel, enjoy the Traveler. Say hi to Nathan Grube and everybody there. Enjoy Connecticut, my friend.
Will do. Thanks, buddy.
Always love talking to Jason Sobel. So good at covering the game of golf. But most alarming in that conversation was what he said. He dropped kind of a bomb in there in the middle when I talked about LIV Golf, and he said, get ready. There could be a lot more names that you recognize that decide to defect to LIV Golf. I cannot wrap my head around this. I can't. That these guys are surrounded by such sycophants that are just going to say, yeah, it's a great idea. Go grab the money. Knowing the long-term damage it's doing to the game, the sport of golf, and the damage it's going to do to them from a PR standpoint, I cannot wrap my head around the fact that you got some of these guys that are going to make this decision, but sounds like they're going to. All right, quick timeout. We'll come back. We'll do some NBA, because I haven't been on with you guys. I wasn't on with you guys for most of last week. And I want to get into what happened at the NBA Finals and what's happened since the NBA Finals. That's next. All right, we welcome you back on this Monday. Don't mind me. I'm Jason Page. If you're watching on YouTube, do me a favor, hit the like button. Make sure to, well, I mean, if you like the show and you're watching, so I hope you do, hit the like button. Also, make sure to subscribe if you haven't already done so. Hit that subscribe button, and pretty cool stuff. This is just the beginning of some of the content we're going to be putting out there. Matter of fact, got a big meeting today. Hopefully get some good news. It's also Monday, which means it's bowling day. I bowl every Monday, and I mean, I'm kind of competitive. I bowl some tournaments here and there, and I'm decent, but not as good as I was 11 or 12 years ago, but still competitive. Can bowl with the big boys, and so Monday's bowling day, so I'm looking forward to that. I don't know if we're going to have a best bet today. I have some stuff written down. We're 1-3 so far on the best bet. But there's nothing I'm crazy about. I think hockey's too much of a crapshoot. And I know the Avalanche have jumped out to this lead against the Lightning, but you know the old saying, series doesn't begin until you have a home team lose and that sort of thing. So, and I know people are going to say, why aren't you talking more about the Stanley Cup final? But the reality is, it's just, I have not watched. I'm not going to lie to you. I will never come on this microphone right here, which I view as a trust. I will never come on this microphone and lie to you and pretend that I watch something that I don't, which is what a lot of these guys on radio and TV do. They pretend to watch. They're not watching. You can't watch everything. You just can't. When I was younger, it was easier, but as you get older, you just can't. You got a life. Let me get to some NBA, because we haven't talked since the Warriors. Well, they did what I think everybody thought, at least what I thought they would do. I thought the Warriors were going to win this NBA final, and the Warriors won this NBA final. I was not surprised. I thought they were the better team before the series started. I even said to people, six was the number I had in mind. And you quickly saw, as this series wore down, the Golden State Warriors were the better basketball team. And experience mattered. Lack of a point guard in Boston mattered. Frankly, just the inability to make shots. Nobody other than Al Horford, it felt like, could make a shot in Game 6. And I say that with all due respect to Jason Tatum, who is a fantastic basketball player. But the Warriors were the better team. I think the Heat would have posed more problems for them than Boston did, because the Heat had guys and coaches and people that were used to being in this situation. So the Warriors are NBA champions. It's the fourth ring for this group. When you talk about Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steve Kerr. And credit, all the credit in the world to Stephen Curry. Had a great series. I know he had some issues shooting the three ball, and we can get into that. And you know, when they win the title, if he has any sort of representative numbers, he's going to win the MVP. But make no mistake about this. If not for Andrew Wiggins, I don't know that the Warriors win this title. I'll say it. I do not know that they win this series if not for the play of Andrew Wiggins, who has transformed himself into a special basketball player that really fits the needs of this Warriors team. I don't know how they keep this group together, because it's going to cost them $1 zillion. But what Andrew Wiggins was able to do in this series, in key moments, the shots he made, to me, he was every bit as valuable in this series as anybody the Warriors had. And by the way, Klay Thompson, you shouldn't even get a ring. You were useless in this series. And stop talking trash about guys on other teams. Can we, you know, man alive. I'm not going to, you know, get all on my moral high horse here. I know it's going to sound like it. You know, what the children? What do the children say? My God, could the Warriors, and I'm not talking about Steve Kerr, because I think Steve Kerr has always handled himself with class and grace and dignity. But all these Warriors guys sniping at the media, sniping at other teams, trolling people because they won a title and some people didn't think they were going to. Look, it was a wide open field this year. It was a wide open field in the NBA. Anybody could have won. The Warriors played the best basketball at the most important time, the right matchups. They win an NBA title. But my God, act like you've been there before. It's your fourth title. You got Draymond Green sniping it. John Morant sniping back. And John Morant should shut up too. Fantastic basketball player, but win something before you're going to start talking trash to a team that's won four titles. I think just everybody needs to shut up. Everybody needs to shut up. It's one thing to have a little fun and joke around. But my God, Golden State, win with some class. Win with some class. I get it. Everybody's got, you know, their motivation, that source, that thing they draw on to help get them to that place. I get that a lot of teams have that. A lot of guys have that. But you just won another NBA title. The fourth time. And if I were Stephen Curry, I'd be crying on the court too. You're in that rarefied air. Interesting story that came out of this series. And that was Kenny Atkinson, who's one of Steve Kerr's assistants. And this is what happens. Teams win titles and you can't obviously get the head coach of that team, but you can get their assistants. So Mike Brown goes to the Kings for another shot as a head coach, and we'll see how he does. It's his third different team that he's had the chance to be the head coach of. I don't know if I missed one. He was with the Lakers for about 5 minutes. Cleveland, where LeBron ran him out of town for Ty Lue. I can't remember if he had somewhere else in that mix. I don't think so. But Kenny Atkinson, who's a former Nets head coach, if I'm not mistaken, Kenny Atkinson is also one of Kerr's lieutenants. And he had come to agreement on a deal to go coach the Charlotte Hornets. Until he didn't. Did you see this story? So Kenny Atkinson had a deal to go coach the Hornets and then turns down the Hornets job to stay on as an assistant under Kerr. And it's one of these things that sort of makes you wonder, is there a succession plan? Remember, I talked about this with Brandon Robinson and with Stan Van Gundy about the idea that I don't know if Steve Kerr wants to do this that much longer. He doesn't strike me as the guy that's worried about breaking Greg Popovich's record or, you know, for most wins or any of that stuff. He doesn't strike me as that type. So Kenny Atkinson decided he was not going to coach the Charlotte Hornets and he's going to remain with the Warriors as their top assistant. And nobody's really saying why. Besides the fact that the Hornets have been a dumpster fire under Michael Jordan for a long time, they do have talented guys on that team. And it feels like there was starting to be a bit of an upswing. They took a step backwards this year. Injuries, tough Eastern Conference, on and on and on. But it makes you wonder if this is part of a succession plan that's in place for the Warriors where maybe Steve Kerr's only on this job for another year, 2 years tops. He also sees, you know, Stephen Curry's 34, writing on the wall. Maybe another year or two, and then Kenny Atkinson takes over. Remember, Kerr's had health issues. He has interests outside of the game of basketball that matter to him. And I get the impression that that's what this might be about. He's been a player development guy for the organization. They've got some guys to work with. Jordan Poole, Jonathan Kuminga, James Wiseman, Gary Payton the second. But now what do you do if you're Michael Jordan and you're the Hornets who went through this process, told Mike D'Antoni, who everybody loves and I don't understand it, but okay. You're the Warrior, you're the Hornets, and now you've told Mike D'Antoni, yeah, we're going with Kenny Atkinson, sorry. Only to have Atkinson leave you at the altar. What do you do if you're the Hornets? Can you go back to Mike D'Antoni? And how do you feel if you're Mike D'Antoni knowing you were the runner-up? You're not even the first choice. How do you go into a job, have the respect of those players, when they know, you weren't even the top pick for the job? If you're the Hornets, do you just have to rip it up and start over and interview a whole bunch of other people? I wonder if my guy Stan Van Gundy might be in the mix for that job now too. But again, do you want to take these jobs where you know you weren't the first pick? You weren't the first phone call. It's kind of, you know that show The Bachelor? Kind of reminds me of that show The Bachelor, where you've got, you know, a guy up there and women vying to be his special someone. They give out a rose at the end of the show. And it's like being the final two women on The Bachelor. And the guy chooses one woman and the other woman walks off the stage crying and she wasn't the one for him. And then the woman he chooses says, hey, you know what? I'm good. This was fun, but I'm good. And then you got to go back to the woman that you kicked off the show and say, you know what, on second thought, you can't do it. I don't think you can put the genie back in the bottle, so to speak, here if you're the Hornets and just say, you know what, Mike D'Antoni, we had a change of heart. Or the guy we wanted had a change of heart. We're going to hire you. Terry Stotts is out there. I think he was also in the conversation for that Hornets job. You're a week before the NBA draft. You still don't have a head coach. And you've got two first-round picks at 13 and 15, which I don't know. I haven't done this crazy draft analysis that some people do. But the Hornets under Michael Jordan, this is what you are. You know, at least Derek Jeter knew. At least Derek Jeter knew, yeah, you know what, this owning a baseball team thing, not for me. He bailed faster than you could possibly bail. I mean, he was gone. Once he realized, yeah, not for me. He's doing Subway commercials now. Getting ready for Yankee Old Timers Day. But Jordan, man, he is going to drive that thing. He's going to ride that bus till the wheels fall off, baby. He's going to try and figure out a way. NBA futures. We love talking about the odds on this show. NBA futures. Which, look, now I will say, I will throw the caveat on this. That I think betting on NBA futures when the season just ended. I mean, give me your money. I'll put it in the shredder for you, or I'll go spend it on something worthwhile, or I'll give it to a charity or something. Because spending money trying to pick a team to win an NBA title. I'll tell you something funny, funny story. Had a friend this weekend. He's one of these very opinionated guys that I'm friends with on Facebook. Known him for a while. I won't call him out by name. But he put out this thing this weekend. Well, you know, political futures, which you can gamble on political futures. If you're going to bet on, you know, so-and-so, bet on this politician, and I won't go into who he said, but I said betting on, and this was political futures as far as who's going to win the presidency in 2024. And I said, I don't think I've ever heard of anything dumber in my life than the idea of trying to pick who's going to win the presidency in 2024. Because betting is all about information. Good handicapping, good wagering is all about information. And you've got 2.5 years of information that still hasn't been given to you. Well, but the odds are better now because, you know, once the race solidifies and you only got two candidates, then you can't get great odds. Okay, just because you have great odds on something doesn't mean they're smart odds. Doesn't mean they're good betting odds. It's not smart money in any way, shape, or form. You've got 2.5 years of information to play out. Same thing in the NBA. How you could bet futures. I'm about smart betting. I'm not the guy that's going to give you 4 or 5 picks a day. I like one game a day where I think you can beat the house. Where I think you can beat the odds makers. And I'm looking at the Golden State Warriors as a +566 favorite to win the NBA title next year. And I'm sitting here to myself going, are you kidding? How do you know? There's so many things. Who knows how much of this roster they can keep together? All right, well, the Celtics, then. They're next on the list. They're +600. Why? based on what? The Eastern Conference is a total crapshoot. You know Milwaukee will be good again next year. You know the 76ers with James Harden and the Heat with Jimmy Butler and company. Having said all of that, my biggest shock is how the Clippers, the god-awful Clippers, talk about a mismanaged organization. The Clippers are the fourth best odds to win the NBA title next year. How? Based on what? What crystal ball did somebody look into and say, yeah, let's put the Clippers at plus 666. If you're wondering how far you got to go down to find teams like, say, I don't know, the Lakers, I think they're 11th or 12th best odds. Now I'm going to totally contradict myself. Again, not doing a best bet today. But the Lakers at plus 2,066, or according to Caesars Sportsbook, 2,200. The Lakers at plus 2,200, that is one I would throw a flyer on. And here's why. Again, contradicting everything I just said. But if I was going to just throw a flyer bet, if I had $100 to burn, I'd throw it on the Lakers. And here's why. LeBron, Anthony Davis, a Russell Westbrook who's got something to prove next year. You know they're going to make moves in this offseason. There's all talk about Bradley Beal. And who knows, maybe Westbrook isn't there and Bradley Beal is. Maybe you catch lightning in a bottle, everybody gets healthy. Again, it's a complete flyer bet. Do I think they're going to win the title next year? No. But at 2,200, do I think you take a flyer on them? Yes. Even the Jazz, man, talk about, the odds makers have totally given up on the Jazz. They're plus 5,000. Where are the Knicks? The Knicks are plus 15,000. The Knicks are plus 15,000 to win a title next year. Wow. Throw $100 down and Mike Thibodeau gets the Knicks to an NBA title and you win $15,000. Again, it's a pipe dream. The Nets, I don't even know how the Nets are at plus 600 to win an NBA title next year. Based on what? You don't know if Kyrie Irving's going to be there. You don't have Harden anymore. Kevin Durant. Tough East. I mean, Milwaukee at plus 750 would be an interesting pick. Just a year removed from winning an NBA title. It's an interesting list. Go check it out. The odds on these different things. By the way, Skip Bayless is out of his mind. I'm not going to play the comments because we're just about out of time on the show. Maybe I'll get to it tomorrow. But this light-skinned Steph, little light-skinned Steph, some guys just believe their own press so much and believe they can say whatever they want. We see them on TV and sports and politics all the time, but how Skip Bayless gets away with discussing, as a white man, talking about a black man as a, quote, little light-skinned Steph. I don't know how some of these guys look at themselves in the mirror at night. And I don't know how some of the networks leave them on. Just because people watch doesn't make your programming good, valuable, important, in the best interests of the airwaves. It just doesn't. I'll play the comments on tomorrow's show and podcast. By the way, if you have not checked out the podcast yet, there's a good reason not to, because I haven't put it up yet. That changes today. We will have the Don't Mind Me with Jason Page podcast, available on the Believe platform, BLEAV. Make sure you check that out. Everything you missed from this show, right in a nice little tidy podcast, including our conversation with Jason Sobel from the Action Network, who I appreciate joining us. Back on Tuesday. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make sure to like us if you are watching and enjoyed the show. I got to talk some hockey. I know. I will. Have a great Monday. Stay safe. Catch you back here on Tuesday. Don't mind me. Bye.